Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Adam Sterling with you once again on CFAX 1070. This is Monday, June the 27th of the year 2022. Lots to talk about on the show today, as always, including more reaction from last week's cancellation of the Royal British Columbia Museum. I know we checked in with the Greater Victoria Chamber of Commerce, and I know they, among many others, excited of a summer where we have events in and around downtown Victoria again. I know we saw Pride over the weekend. Thousands and thousands of people were downtown. McDonald Park, I am told, was so busy there was a lineup just to get into the venue. That's a good sign in terms of the good people of Victoria ready to get back out there post-COVID-19 and remind everyone just how big and how amazing the festival circuit in this town used to be. First of all, just to remind ourselves what the Premier said last week about the museum when it got canceled.
Did not come on that journey with us. I, of course, as the head of cabinet, have been getting updates on this and any number of other files over the past 5 years. The public was not. And with all of the other challenges that they are facing in their daily lives, gas prices, food prices, rent, mortgage payments, the prospect of
increase. As you feel the good mood oozing out of you Monday morning hearing all this stuff.
Increased interest rates, challenges in healthcare. The public felt that we were putting all of those to one side just to focus on the museum. That wasn't the case, but that was the perception. And I just did not want this very important institution to become something to be kicked around as part of a laugh line at a dinner party or at the soccer field when it needs to be embraced as something important to all British Columbians and indeed all Canadians. And
we're continuing to gather reaction. Bruce Williams, Greater Victoria Chamber of Commerce CEO, was on with Warren Dean filling in for Al Farabee this morning. Want to analyze that conversation.
Where is the Greater Victoria Chamber of Commerce on this?
Well, we, of course, had great contact with our members. We had outreach from all over the place, every single sector, everywhere. So I think the uptake on it really is that the province, the premier in particular, were showing respect for taxpayers and for voters and for business people and everybody by saying, yeah, I think we need to step back and take a look at this. I mean, to not have done that, as he admitted that he did, would have probably been political disaster mm-hmm. for them. They realized that it was probably not done the way it could have best done in the room when the announcement was made, and kind of realized that they maybe could have provided more information and more background. And it seems that the outcome that they announced at that point was something that was done without a great deal of consultation. Again, there was. We don't know that. We haven't been told. But I think in these next steps that the province has announced, they do have an opportunity to do a lot more outreach, a lot more consultation. Speak in particular with stakeholders in the tourism sector, in the retail sector, with Indigenous people and with various elements around the province that want some input into what this museum will look like going forward.
Can you give me an idea of what you were hearing with the Greater Victoria Chamber of Commerce when this was first announced and then the reaction to last week's backtracking on it?
Well, the initial reaction was it's too much money. Why is it so much money? Why is it happening in such a hurry?
All great points. All points that I had occurred to myself as well.
Why is it going to take the number, I guess, years for this whole thing to come around and be completed and be open again?
Yeah, there were so many questions when it first happened. And I'm glad that Bruce Williams is saying that because I think everybody was quietly thinking that. And I think a lot of folks maybe were under the impression that they hadn't been paying attention and maybe everybody else knew about this. I don't recall hearing much. I know, two thrown speeches. I can hear Horgan's voice in my head as I say that. But I think all of us felt blindsided to some degree on this, regardless of what the government says now.
Part of the process in consultation. And it was also not a part of the announcement to say those answers were just not in place at the time. Going forward now, we've heard from people again saying, well, he did the right thing. Good for him. He stepped up. He took the blame. He took, if you will, he took the bullet for somebody who maybe was another part of the process. But as the guy at the top of the chain, John Horgan's a smart guy. And he said, I need to take the blame for this.
Mm-hmm. He did. And that is a leader's role. A leader's role is to stand up there and take the hit, even if it's not your fault at all. You had nothing to do with it. Somebody totally, utterly failed you. It's still your job to stand up there and say, this is my fault. That's the mantle of leadership. It weighs heavily, and it should.
That's now opened up, of course, a whole other conversation about, well, is he doing that because he's not going to be around to ultimately see the project completed because we're not sure how long he's going to stay as leader. But the other part of it is that he's now saying, I'm going to take the blame. Instead of pointing the finger at another ministry or at Melanie Mark, Minister Mark, saying, no, this was me. I'm the one that took this. He was at the announcement. It was her announcement to make, along with the Honorable Carol James, who is the chair of the board of the RBCM right now. But Premier Horgan took the blame. So I think a lot of people give him for credit for standing up and doing, I guess, the honorable thing. But because he is the Honorable John Horgan, after all. But after you take a look at what's going to happen next, consultation is happening after the fact, and that's a little bit frustrating for some, but it's also an indication that they want to do this right, and they want to kind of do a restart and see what it looks like. So part of the consultation has to be things like, will it stay in Victoria? It better stay in Victoria.
Yeah.
It needs to stay in Victoria. It's been an anchor here for a long time for people that come here as tourists, as cultural tourists. The number of school children that come to visit the museum on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. It's a huge part of the tourism economy in this region. And any conversation about moving it elsewhere, get to know it right now.
What would it take, what is it? Are you feeling that you have to fight for this to stay in Victoria?
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. I hadn't even thought of that.
Victoria, is there a legitimate risk of it moving out?
There's been nuances in the conversation that even the premier himself referred to. Nothing definite has been said, but the fact that that was sort of put into the conversation has had a lot of people set up and say, "Oh, wait a minute, what do you?"
He's right. Bruce Williams is raising an excellent point. I hadn't really thought much about this, but now that I think back, the traveling exhibits themselves are the sort of thing that would make it so that we wouldn't need one central museum in Victoria. Also, the idea of repatriating artifacts to various Indigenous nations where they may have been initially acquired. There's, I think it's either 197 or 198, my apologies, recognized First Nations within what we call the province of British Columbia. It would make sense if we were repatriating an artifact. We wouldn't keep it here on Lekwungen-speaking territories, these Squamalt and Songhees people. It would go back to whichever territory it was originally taken from, if it was to truly be repatriated. That would suggest that we could see smaller collections, both on individual nations, or if it's even not Indigenous artifacts. You heard the Premier last week talk about, like, if you want to go to Barkerville and see all the sort of artifacts and cultural collections and whatnot in terms of resource extraction, the history of British Columbia. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of it, but he's right. There have been or is foreshadowing for that.
You mean it might go somewhere else? So we have no definite indication of that, but the possibility has been entered into the conversation, so we need to stay on top of that.
What would be the best case scenario now moving forward? Obviously, consultation is one of the keys. Have you guys been contacted at all?
We have been in contact with the RBCM and with the Premier's office. Yes, we have. Next steps, I don't think we can really say until the process begins. We can have anticipation of it being in everyone's best interest, but we're not going to project or forecast what this is going to be. We want it to be a result of a really good, solid, fulsome conversation with a lot of people, and that's what they've indicated they're going to do. So I think that outcome is going to determine itself, and it's not something that we try and determine ahead of time.
Bruce Williams, CEO, Greater Victoria Chamber of Commerce, speaking with CFAX 1070 earlier this morning, offering the Chamber's perspective with respect to the announced and then paused redevelopment of the Royal British Columbia Museum. The museum itself will stay open for the moment, which, if I can just say, in terms of tourism operators here in the Victoria area, is probably in our best interest. The last thing that we want is COVID's finally gone. People who've missed Victoria, who love coming to Victoria as tourists after years, are finally able to come back here. First impressions matter a lot, as well as the impression that you get after a long time away. We don't want people coming back here after we've locked everybody out, I mean Canada, because of COVID-19 restrictions, mostly for the last 2 years, come back and see a downtown core with no Royal British Columbia Museum. We certainly don't want to have any problems of crime and disorder as people show up. We want to put our best foot forward and roll out the red carpet for them. A museum that is closed for the next several years as we try to reestablish our role as a global tourism destination. There's no way that would be amenable for us. There's no way that would be optimal for our downtown tourism industry. So from just that perspective, I'm glad the museum's staying open. I hope it stays open for years to come. Do we need to rehabilitate it? Perhaps. Yeah, maybe. But for the moment, we need to, I don't know, we need to roll out the welcome mat. We need people coming back here, and we need them to bring money and have positive experiences. And if the first thing they see when they get off that coho, the first thing they see when they get off that tour bus in front of the Empress is, oh, let's go to the museum and see that wonderful woolly mammoth again. And it's got bars on the windows or just the door is closed. Oh, well, what else is there to do around here? I know there's a lot. But the museum is one of the big attractions, and it always has been. And it's important that it stays that way through this summer into this fall. We're going to take a quick break. Pride was back on the weekend. Thousands of people showed up. What about Canada Day? It's coming up this Friday. Are we ready? Well, the special subcommittee that was struck by Victoria City Council met on Friday. And while many issues are worked out, there are some things left up in the air. They're going to have one last briefing, it seems, after Committee of the Whole this Thursday at City Hall. Apparently, they're going to have to paddle a canoe, like the mayor and Sharmarky Dubo and Stephen Andrew. You can hear it for yourself coming up right after this break. Don't go anywhere.
It's Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
I'm really glad that the museum isn't closing. I know it would have been a great, wondrous potential opportunity for us 8 years from now. I'd rather have something that we can actually show visitors right now, because we need something to show visitors right now. We're trying to reestablish our role as a global tourism destination. We're trying to reestablish the vibrancy and vitality of the downtown core, and we are still having problems of crime and disorder. We're working on it. We're doing the best that we can to keep control. Vic PD is deployed downtown, and we actually heard of an incident that happened over the weekend where, and you know, I get called a fearmonger for saying this, but I'm going to keep saying it because it's true. There are stranger attacks or assaults or whatever you want to call them that have become an increasing phenomenon during COVID-19. Some people who are in an altered state. Now, I'm not going to say how they got to that altered state. We can engage in supposition all we want. Perhaps it just arises naturally. Perhaps it's to do with intoxicating substances. Perhaps it's a combination of the two. But you see people from time to time who go around and you can tell they cause problems. They'll push you around, they'll yell at you, and then they'll run away, or they'll get into a fight with something or somebody nobody else can see. It happens, and it's unfortunate. We had what sounded an awful lot like an incident similar to that occur downtown near Douglas, and I think it was across street. I think it was Fort or near that intersection over the weekend. It had to do with multiple cases of sexual assault in terms of apparently young women, a man running up to them and assaulting them like in a chain, like over and over again. Apparently, it was with the cops around. Now, you have to think that any person who would engage in that sort of conduct in a public place with police present and nearby, a person having no concern, it would seem, about the consequences of those actions, probably not in the right frame of mind to start with. You have to watch out for those guys. Now, again, I'm not blaming victims. I'm not doing anything like that. I'm just saying that downtown is different. You need to maintain an awareness because there are some people who are running around and they're going to cause problems. You can steer clear of them. You can see them coming. You can cross the street. They target randomly, as far as I can tell. It's not like they're going to chase you around. You just have to, you know, keep your distance and hope that they don't decide to, you know, yell at you or whatever. Anyway, Constable Cam McIntyre was on with Vic PD earlier today talking about a number of victims who did exactly the right thing. Man came up, assaulted them, made physical unwanted contact for a sexual purpose, we are told, as alleged. What did they do? They went to the cops. They said, that guy over there, he just assaulted me. Go arrest him. And you know what the police did? They arrested him.
In rapid succession on Douglas Street. Can you talk a little bit about this situation and maybe what we can do to help the community out?
Well, this is an investigation that's ongoing and that we're hoping that...
And everything's alleged. I want to point that out.
It's members of our community who were out and about Saturday night, perhaps had interactions with this man, perhaps were assaulted by this man. We're hoping that they can come forward and speak with us as we're looking for additional information. But we were called to the 1100 block of Douglas Street. This is in the area between Fort and View. And this was just after 9 p.m. on Saturday night. And we had a report that a man was sexually assaulting women in the area, pushing people, being generally violent. And as we arrived, our officers, we had several patrol units arrive. As they arrived on scene, they actually witnessed this man sexually assault three separate women in quick succession. They took the man into custody. As they did that, several other women came forward, and for a total of five women that came forward as being victimized by this man. He's facing several recommended charges of sexual assault. He was actually held in custody and then held in custody over the weekend. So
wow.
He'll appear
good
in court again today. But it's our belief, based on the circumstances of this man's behavior, based on some other knowledge we have of this investigation, that there are likely other people that had negative interactions with this man on Saturday night, and we're hoping to hear from them.
How important is it for those victims to come forward? Obviously, it's sometimes a really tough situation. How can we make people feel better about coming forward, and just how important is it for you guys to help your cause?
Well, it's undoubtedly a very traumatic and challenging experience, and we understand that survivors of these offenses sometimes don't want to speak with police. There are many avenues in our community one can go to. There's an emergency room physician. There's great resources available at the Victoria Sexual Assault Center. And we have some other options if you're reporting to police at Vic PD, where we have non-uniform detectives that can speak with you in a safe, less sterile environment and gather information that way. So there are a variety of options. We understand that not everyone who is a survivor of sexualized violence wants to speak with police, but please do know that there are a variety of options in our community, and the folks at the Victoria Sexual Assault Center are some of the best at what they do. So a very valuable resource for anyone in the community who's listening.
Constable Cam McIntyre joining us this morning with Victoria Police as we take a look at some of the things that happened over the weekend. Arson is becoming an uptick in activity. It gets dangerous at any time, but now we've gotten some warmer weather, some dry conditions. It's even more dangerous now.
We've seen several recent events of fires, some of them confirmed arson, some of them suspicious that we're still investigating. We've also seen other fires over the weekend. We had a generator that set fire inside someone's residence. We had cigarette butts in a planter on someone's deck that set fire. Non-suspicious events, but still fires nonetheless. But what we're working on is a larger investigation into several arsons. What really originated, if people recall, on the 17th, we had a fire in James Bay that destroyed about six vehicles in that area. It was quite a significant mm-hmm. fire. Some small fires leading up to early Friday morning. And then we had several fires, two of which are confirmed arsons, that took place. There was a fire in the 1,000 block of Balmoral Road. This is near the intersection of Cook Street and Balmoral. We had Victoria firefighters extinguish the fire, and there was no injuries or significant damage. But that's a suspicious fire that's still under investigation. And then we had a really concerning event at the area of Broad and View Streets. This was in the early morning hours on Friday, about 3:40 a.m. There was an unhoused person sleeping in that area, and some of their belongings were actually set alight. Thankfully, no one was injured, but that is a confirmed arson as well as a fire a short time later.
Oh, that's disturbing. I was aware of that incident. Many of you probably saw the photographs circulating on social media as well. I wasn't aware how that fire actually happened. So it wasn't somebody setting a fire. It was somebody's belongings being set on fire. That's awful.
Later, in a garbage can in the 500 block of 8th Street. We did arrest one suspect. That person was held in custody. That is in relation to one of these fires. However, their connection to the broader incidents of several arsons and suspicious fires, that's something we're still working on, still working to gather evidence.
Is there a pattern or a time of day that maybe the public can be more aware or kind of look out for their community a little bit more when it comes to arsons or troublesome fires? Obviously, when you're talking about a situation where it's not suspicious, you don't know. But with arson, is there kind of a pattern people, the public, can kind of keep an eye out for?
Well, we see different MOs with different actors in terms of arsons. What's challenging about several of these recent fires is that they're happening in the very early morning hours when most people are sleeping. So, but as always, we encourage people to do the best they can in the environment they have to keep an eye out, to look out for their neighbors. And if you do see something suspicious, someone acting oddly or in an area where they shouldn't be.
See, that's the key. Somebody acting oddly. All of us have, and we're primed in terms of instinctual intuition, et cetera, et cetera. We can tell when another human being is acting oddly. We might not be able to put our finger on why, but we might just get, you know, some people would call it just a weird vibe from somebody. You know, that person, they're not acting right. That person, they're like, there's something. Trust your gut. when it comes to being a potential victim of crime. If somebody is acting in a suspicious manner or they're not supposed to be there, doesn't hurt to call it in, especially if you have reason to believe that that person could either be about to set a fire or assault somebody or threaten somebody. It never hurts to be prepared and have somebody check it out, especially if you've got that bad feeling, because more often than not, you'll find your gut is calculating and processing all these variables from your senses that you might not be consciously aware of, but you need to listen to that. Whether it's somebody acting weird downtown, you want to keep your distance, or if it's somebody not quite right, sort of rummaging around those garbage cans or maybe looking over their shoulder, looking for somebody. These are the sorts of things that we can all watch for and help make our community safer by preventing these incidents of crime before they happen. I want to take a quick break. Up next, Canada Day is this Friday, Ship Point, downtown. What can we expect? Victoria Council had their final Canada Day subcommittee meeting on Friday. Clips coming up.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Now, I'm not saying if you come downtown, you're going to have somebody do something to you. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I am saying is that in a downtown with tens of thousands of people in it, there might be a handful that you want to avoid. You can usually see how they're acting. They're going to be acting in an erratic manner. Maybe they're shouting at somebody who's not there. As long as you steer clear, you'll be just fine. That's what many of us do who have continued to work and operate downtown every day during the pandemic. You get used to it. And again, I'm probably not the best salesperson. But on the other hand, I'm the guy who lives with constant guilt because somebody had their hands. I have no idea how that guy's doing. It's been almost 2 years since that heartbreaking newscast about the young dad who had his hands all sliced up in Centennial Square because he wandered in there earlier in the pandemic, having no idea there were some very dangerous people that mayor and council were allowing to live there, as well as apparently no video cameras, so they couldn't actually catch anybody who did it, or at least not good enough video cameras to catch whoever did it. And because there was no warning about that, you had serious injuries happen. And if I had yelled a little louder, maybe if I had been a little bit more persuasive, maybe if I had shouted at council just a little bit more, they wouldn't have been able to hurt people permanently through their bad policies like they did hurt people permanently through their bad policies. That's okay. I'm sure they still feel bad about it sometimes. So anyway, how are they going to stage the next Canada Day? Will it end up being a success or not? We don't know yet. They had the final meeting on Friday, though, of the Canada Day subcommittee.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We have one official item of business, which is to discuss the canoe protocol. But the main meeting agenda is just to get an update on Canada Day from Mr. Day, who is the city staff lead. Ms. Mycroft is here as well. And so maybe we'll start with Mr. Day giving us an update since the last meeting. And then let's talk about what we need to do as a committee on that day, what will be expected of all of us. And then at the end, we can talk about the canoe protocol. I know the details are still being worked out, but we will get some information so that we're all clear on our roles. So
this was Friday. This was 7 days to showtime. Canada Day is this Friday. Ordinarily, you'd think everything's locked into place. Everybody knows their role. Everybody knows you have to do this and when. Not quite, at least not as of Friday.
Fundraising, as I mentioned, we're looking really good. We have experienced a lot of cost escalation in the last few months, and some items that proved very difficult to source for this event last minute. But Douglas Smith and Blue Coast has prevailed and had some success there. We've also had some great collaboration with the Ska Festival and some site efficiencies there. Ska Festival, of course, is in mid-festival right now mode.
They then heard from Douglas Smith, who's with the firm Blue Coast Events. They're putting it on.
I think people are going to be super enthusiastic next Friday. I'm hoping for a really big crowd. We've got...
And they might get a big crowd. In fact, I hope they do. Pride had a massive crowd over the weekend, so I would expect this Canada Day. No reason you can't have just as many folks or more back downtown.
Pretty well all of the details from a production standpoint buttoned down. And so it's kind of, you know, usually what happens is that the last week before the event becomes eerily quiet because everybody's been informed of what's going on. A lot of the production has been taken care of. So we'll see what happens next week. But we're in good shape, and we're going to have a fantastic day. The weather looks good. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a process, but And again, with Jeff has been masterful.
So anyway, bit of a process. It sounds like there are some details that still need to be worked out.
It's really quite remarkable how this coming together of staff and contracted staff and city staff have really created an amazing event. And next Friday, I think we'll all be, I'm sure, surprised at something. Something always happens that we're not expecting, but I suspect also that the day is going to be really memorable, particularly after the absence of the last few years.
Memorable, okay.
The need for us to begin to think about these sorts of things much earlier on.
Oh, yeah. So, obvious. Well, that wasn't necessarily anybody's fault. That's because we saw Canada Day effectively canceled, or at least drastically diminished. Then there was the outcry. Then you had Mayor Helps revisit the issue. I don't need to remind you about all the stuff that happened in terms of Canada Day being off and then kind of on and then maybe different and maybe we'll have fireworks. Then this committee was formed. So they were behind from the beginning because of all the uncertainty. But they seem to have made up most of that lost time, one would hope.
On, of course, with everything. But I think with the sponsorship in particular. And it does go to support Jeff's comments and Douglas's comments about how excited everyone was to participate this year, that even though there was a very contracted period of time and, you know, lots of last-minute asks, that people really did step up.
Lots of last-minute asks and apparently some... And so when you see the sponsors for Canada Day, I want you to know those organizations, those businesses, those firms, they came through in the end to make sure that we had as best a Canada Day as we could. And as council heard on Friday, some of them were literally asked with like 1 week to go. And they said, yeah, here's some cash. We want to make sure that this is the best event we can for our downtown and for the good people of Victoria. So they should be commended for their participation.
Where we are right now is remarkable.
Did you hear that? So Marianne Alto says, like, where we are right now, even though there's still some details to work out, is remarkable. Then she goes, ha!
Where we are right now is remarkable. And what we have left to do now is just...
A little bit of an edge on that. You can read between the lines.
It's the day of things that will inevitably come up, and also just to talk a little bit about the beginning of the day and how we want to be good hosts.
They need to get this right in terms of the... And that's where the details are missing right now. Stephen Andrew, jumping in.
Too, would like to thank Douglas for his work and the time he spent getting support for the... sponsors that came out the last minute. We had a very good meeting with Bayview and
I don't want to have just one or two, but Bayview's one of them. I want to have the whole list out there because everybody, I hope, can be appreciative of all the sponsors who came forward. Stephen Andrew also talking about how the discussions that were entered into with the organizations that are sponsors and supporting Canada Day, some of them were at the last minute and they came through.
It has been remarkable entering into discussions with those supporters, and I think it says a lot about the need and the want and the desire for a big celebration on Canada Day. It is not normal, as I think Douglas can attest to be going out and trying to get people a week from an event such as this, and for them to absolutely just be so generous as to come on with extraordinary amounts of money.
So that generosity is something that I want to highlight as part of this segment. Sharmarky Dubo jumping in.
For me, particularly Canada Day, special day for me is the day that I took the oath to become a Canadian citizen. So it always has been a special day for me. And I want to thank Mr. Douglas and his team for the hard work and commitment to work with us, the city, to really deliver this for the community. And I also want to thank Chief and the city staff for their commitment and professionalism to do this work. And thanks to all the sponsors.
All right. So everybody's getting a thank you. Lisa Helps jumps in. So what exactly are we going to be doing that day? This is 7 days to showtime, remember? This is last Friday. Supposedly the final meeting of the Canada Day subcommittee. You're going to hear that it's not actually the final meeting, but that's coming up.
It will be a good day. Now maybe we could get into some of the details about what is needed and where are we expected to be as committee members. I think we should all get a good sleep on June 30th, rather, because it's going to be a long, full, and busy day for all of us. So
hopefully.
Through you, Mayor.
Oh, this is Colleen Mycroft.
Through you, Mayor Help, sure, that works for me. So all the mayor is correct. We're actually meeting with the Songhees directly after this call.
So it's not going to be the final meeting.
We'll be meeting with the folks that were assigned to support this and guide us. So more details to come on that as they unfold, and those will be around the details around the protocols for mayor and councillors that are in the canoe when you arrive at the shore.
It's a big deal. They're going to do what they call a canoe protocol, where there's going to be a canoe paddled to the arrival point, which I assume is near ship point. There's going to be a request made to sort of come ashore and be invited by the Lekwungen speaking peoples to have this festival. And everyone involved will have to observe and abide by the special indigenous protocols that they're about to learn might change during the event.
What unfolds there? What does that look like? You know, some of the finer details there. Everyone on this call will see that is in the canoe will have an invite now to meet over at the Delta. And I believe it's in there for 10:30 right now.
So they're going to be across the water, then they're going to come across in the canoe to ship point. They also don't know if it'll be one or two. That's also yet to be worked out.
So more details to come on that. But just so you're aware, there'll be a safety briefing for you when you arrive there. There will be some details about how to get in and out of the canoe.
That's good to know.
The length of time it takes to cross from the location you depart to the time it takes to get to protocol corner. Staff along with Dion are right now doing up some maps.
They're going to do a map for paddling across from the Delta that we can all... Okay.
To support the location. I know a media advisory is going out in advance for the protocol piece, for the canoe portion. And there are some details to work out, as I said, around when you arrive at protocol corner, then you are asking the permissions to come ashore, what that looks like, and then what the procession looks like over to the main stage where the dancers are and how that will unfold.
This is 7 days to showtime.
We'll have some more clarity later on this afternoon. Mayor Helps, I would think that the smaller council group here and the staff probably need a briefing next week, and we can sort that out offline, but I just want to raise it here so it doesn't get lost in everything. And happy to answer any questions if I can and more.
So anyway,
I'll just add that, you know, we have taken a lot of our guidance this year on how to mark and commemorate this day from the nations in light of what happened last summer, just before Canada Day, and an awakening in this country that that reconciliation is important alongside commemorating the founding of our country, and just, you know, Ms. Mycroft touched on it, but the symbolic importance, and I hope that this carries on as a new protocol for Canada Day, that before we begin a festival on the Lekwungen lands, that we paddle across and ask their permission to come ashore and to hold the festival here. So I want to thank both Songhees and Esquimalt for their guidance and help and support to make sure that we do this in a good way.
So they have to do it right. This is the sort of thing that I would hope should be rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed, because the last thing we need is somebody not knowing what they're doing because they've never done this before on Canada Day in front of everybody with the big crowd. That's not what we want to see, at least I hope.
Very much, and thanks very much, Colleen, for that reminder. And I just wanted to, for those folks who haven't had the opportunity to be involved in a canoe protocol previously, either in the organization or in the actual canoes, and I know several of us have had that privilege in the past, I just want to remind us that this is a truly extraordinary experience and opportunity, and the most, perhaps the most important watchword for us as guests and as participants is flexibility and patience. These protocols have their own life and evolution, and they will unfold as they will.
Okay.
And so for us, it is important for us to, you know, be where we're supposed to be at different specific times, but to understand that the events themselves have a life of their own, and it's important for us to be respectful and to be guests in the truest sense of being able to be adaptable and flexible and to do what is required of us. Our hosts will, in fact, be our guides, and they will certainly allow us to understand what's happening, to learn, to participate, and for us to be there as their guests. And we need to remember that sometimes our expectations are very scripted. And in this case, I would urge everyone who is involved to really, really, truly be in the moment and to relish the opportunity. I think you'll find it to be a truly memorable one, and one that that will mark a very different approach to Canada Day at its start, and I hope will set the tone for the day. So I just wanted to remind us of this.
So in other words, it sounds like there's no script and there's no set in stone protocol per se, but they will be told what to do in the moment, and it's important that they maintain flexibility. And this is how it's going to start. I want to point that out. This is how the festivities get rolling. I want to take a quick break. We're going to hear the rest of what they do know and what they had yet to hammer down as of Friday. Again, we are 4 days to showtime right now. It's this Friday. So they may have had more developments over the weekend. I would hope so. We've got more details coming up.
You're listening to Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right, Canada Day, this Friday, they're going to try to start it with what they call a canoe protocol. What is that? The Lekwungen-speaking peoples know what that is. And the role of council will be to be flexible, to be respectful, to be prepared for the unexpected. And they're going to try to sort of have this be the start of a day that is otherwise going to be meticulously scripted. Lisa helps.
And just one more thing about the canoe protocol. So in the canoe will be the four of us, Canada Day subcommittee members, Ms. Jenkins, our city manager.
So it'll be Lisa helps, Marianne Alto, Stephen Andrews, Sharmarki Dubo, Jocelyn Jenkins and Colleen Mycroft will probably be there too with the mayor.
Ms. Mycroft, and then Ms. Liu and Fang from...
That's one person I don't know.
Central Walk as the presenting sponsors.
Oh, I see.
So that will be, that's who will be in our canoe, and we've been advised that we will have to paddle.
Okay.
We're not just going to float across, so we'll need to we'll need to do some work to get ourselves across.
You know, I really, really hope this goes well. I really, really do.
Hopefully we'll have some assistance, but all right, thank you.
Mayor Helps, if I might just add to that one thing, sorry. In the past, it's been important for them, for our hosts, to have some control over the canoe, because, of course, the canoe itself is a very precious thing.
I don't want to be that person, but if somebody said, Adam, would you let Lisa Helps, Marianne Alto, and Sharmarki Dubo, and Stephen Andrew borrow your car? I would hesitate. I'm sorry, I just would, especially if none of them had ever driven a car before. So I'm really hoping that there's some professional drivers helping them out here.
And so I would expect that there would be a couple, or perhaps even as many as three or four.
Okay, that's good.
Other paddlers. And it may be, just as a warning, it may be that our group is divided into more than one canoe.
Oh.
Just to
Do they know for sure?
Respect the fact that they will have expert paddlers there to assist us. Yes, we'll be paddling, but we won't be on our own.
Okay, that's better.
And so we shouldn't be surprised if, in fact, the group that you describe, which it sounds like it's about eight or nine people.
Are they going to, like, train? Are they going to go out and paddle beforehand? Or
they might actually be placed in two different canoes.
Okay, so they might be in different canoes now.
So, like Mayor Helps and Councillor Alto both mentioned, we'll take our lead from the nations on this. But we do have a list of questions that we want to get clarity on. And one of them was there may be multiple boats and what that looks like. And there may be a ceremonial piece for us prior to.
Oh, that's pretty important.
To actually getting into the canoe on the Delta side of the water. So there are some finer details to work out.
So they don't know.
And staff have.
This is the final meeting of the subcommittee.
Those on the radar, and we'll ensure that that is all communicated to this group.
So hopefully they get that information in the next 3 days.
In a timely fashion.
Lisa Helps.
The best thing, and I think actually we discussed this, is we will get together for a briefing after the.
Okay, it's not the final meeting anymore.
The committee of the whole meeting.
There's going to be a final meeting this Thursday.
Meeting next Thursday. So we'll all be here anyways, and we can just gather and get briefed on what we need to do.
Anyway.
Okay, and more details to come. And thank you to Ms. Mycroft and your.
Okay, so I guess they're just. Okay.
Your team for working on that. Mr. Smith, can you just walk us through what the first few, moments on stage at noon look like? what's going to happen there.
Yeah, so we've got that worked out, right? Tell me we have that nailed down.
Yeah, we've got some different ideas of what we would like to see happen. We want sort of as powerful a spectacle as possible to start the day, but we're still in conversation, so there's more meetings that need to take place to get the run of show for the opening ceremonies locked down. The run of show for the VIP reception is pretty well locked down, but for the opening ceremonies, we definitely need to still have some more discussions to see how that's exactly going to play itself out.
This is 7 days to showtime. Okay.
Okay, thank
you. The timing of the speeches, who's going to be speaking.
Yeah, like who's going to speak? When are they going to speak?
Et cetera.
Thank you. And as Councillor Aalto says, some of these things will unfold as they do in the moment. But my
Yep, sounds like it.
My understanding is we have the Lekwungen dancers confirmed.
Hopefully.
To open the stage. And is that's correct?
That's correct. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay.
Excellent. All right. Is there anything that anyone wants to say or share?
Notice she didn't say any questions that we could answer or want to know.
Either staff or consultants or counselors that hasn't been said or shared or asked yet.
An uncomfortable silence fills the room.
Okay. It looks like we are in good shape then for next Friday.
Does it?
Again, thanks to all. And please keep in touch with us over the next week about if there's anything that comes up that you need our help and support with. And we will take it from there.
There we go. Thus ends the final meeting of the City of Victoria's Council Canada Day Subcommittee. Sounds like there's still some things that have yet to be nailed down. But, you know, I do a show that is largely unscripted most days. Notice I say largely because, of course, certain facts and details you want to get right. But just because it's not written down or meticulously rehearsed or understood in advance doesn't mean that they can't put on one heck of a show. So everybody's crossing their fingers, and we're hoping that this goes really well. Texter tells me, I'm not going to Ship Point. I have issues with the lack of access in and out. What is the access in and out for Ship Point? Yeah, I guess that may be a little bit of a challenge. I've had some other people tell me that they're worried about capacity issues with Ship Point. Anyway, look, I don't want to run it down. We've had a bunch of sponsors come forward at the last minute. I think they should be commended for supporting this. It sounds like everybody's heart is in the right place. It just also sounds like as of 7 days to showtime, which was on Friday, today's on Monday, so hopefully they've developed it a great deal since those clips were recorded on Friday's council meeting. Sounds like there's still quite a bit left up in the air. And I really, really hope some of them are practicing paddling or something this week. And it's not the first time they've ever done it when they actually get into the canoe with perhaps thousands of people on shore watching during the Canada Day celebrations itself. Practice makes perfect, right? Anyway, fingers crossed. 4 days to go. Quick break, back after this.